Hare Krishna. My obeisances to all the devotees here. Today we're reading from Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 4, Text number 5 and number 6. Chapters entitled Vidura Approaches Maitreya. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya, Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jaya. Yet in spite of my knowing His desire to destroy the dynasty, O Arindama Vidura, I followed him because it was impossible for me to bear separation from the lotus feet of the Master. And we're going to read text number 6 as well, and that is where the purport is. So I'll just read that by myself. Translation. Thus following, I saw my patron and master, Lord Sri Krishna, sitting alone and deeply thinking, taking shelter on the bank of the river Saraswati, although he is the shelter of the goddess of fortune. Purport. Those who are in the renounced order of life often take shelter underneath a tree. The Lord was found by Uddhava in that condition of taking shelter, as do persons who have no shelter. Because he is the proprietor of everything, everywhere is his shelter, and everywhere is under his shelter. The entire material and spiritual cosmic manifestation is sustained by him, and therefore he is the shelter of everything. So there was nothing astonishing in his taking shelter in the way of the unsheltered who were in the renounced order of life. I'll read the verse again, and because this is what has the purpose, I'll read this one again, number 6. Adrakshame kamasinam vichinvandayatam patim shriniketanam sadasvatyam kritaketamaketanam. Thus following, I saw my patron and master, Lord Sri Krishna, sitting alone and deeply thinking, taking shelter on the bank of the river Saraswati, although he is the shelter of the goddess of fortune. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I pray for the blessings of all of the assembled devotees to say something appropriate on these verses. So the pastime is developing here that Uddhava is speaking to Vidura, and they've been speaking for a while now. I was just listening to a class by my spiritual master yesterday in Mayapur, and he was speaking about Uddhava's ecstatic symptoms, and that was in chapter 2. So now we're on chapter 4. So it goes on for a while, but it's a very wonderful part of Bhagavatam. We're hearing about Krishna's pastimes very early on in the Bhagavatam. And here, Uddhava is explaining to Vidura that we're hearing in the beginning of this chapter about Maushala Leela, how the Yadus disappeared from the world. And soon we're going to hear about how Krishna also disappears from the world. And Uddhava is saying to Vidura that Krishna had told him to go. Krishna had told him to go to... Where did he tell him to go to? Badrikashram, yeah. Krishna told Uddhava to go to Badrikashram to preach to the inhabitants of Badrikashram and people on the way. And where is it that Krishna had sent Uddhava before? Vrindavan. So Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. Although Uddhava is a Dwarkavasi, and he's the cousin of Krishna, and he's in the mood of a servant, then he had experienced Vrindavan as well, so he could share what that means, what the mood of the Brajbasis is, so he had a lot to give. So Krishna was sending to him to Badrikashram. But Uddhava couldn't do it. He couldn't go. He couldn't leave Krishna. Maybe it's difficult for us to understand what it's like to see Krishna or be with Krishna. Uddhava was with Krishna directly, and then Krishna said, okay, you go to Badrikashram. And Uddhava knew what was going to happen. He could see that the Yadu dynasty was going to disappear, as he mentions in one verse here. It says that Krishna, I don't find it exactly, but that Krishna was going to, yeah. Thus he who desired to destroy his family told me previously to go to Badrikashram. So if Uddhava knew what was going to happen, the Yadus were going to become destroyed, and that Krishna was going to disappear. So imagine the separation that Uddhava is feeling from Krishna, and he just follows Krishna, he can't leave him. And when he followed after Krishna, then he saw that Krishna was sitting under, do we know what kind of tree? Banyan tree, very good. But you could, because you're preparing for class tomorrow, I say. So Krishna was sitting under a banyan tree on the bank of the river Saraswati. And it's very interesting, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the verse tomorrow, just to make it a little bit harder for you to give class, is explaining that when Krishna is sitting under the banyan tree, then it's a small banyan tree. So it represents the fact that this universe is the smallest. And also, the banyan tree represents the material world as it's described in the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna is sitting with his back to it because he's going to be leaving this world. So it's all very symbolic and very poignant. Krishna is sitting there preparing to leave this world. His mission has been accomplished. Yesterday, I had a client, a gardening client, and they were Indian family, very, very cultured, lovely family, ideal clients, and I was talking to them about Krishna, and I was saying, do you know any verses from the Bhagavad Gita? I was saying, you must know, Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. She was struggling. So Paritranaya, that's about all she could reach. She was a Brahman family. She knew all the Gayatri mantras, all of them, not just the Brahma Gayatri, but I was preaching to her, you learned all these things in your childhood and now you should still know them. So generally Indians at least know that verse, that Krishna comes to destroy the demons, to protect the devotees and to establish the principles of religion. And Krishna has done that. Krishna has done all of that. He's fulfilled his purpose through his wonderful, inconceivable pastimes with lots of plot twists. So he's done all of that and now he is going to go back to the spiritual world. Later, when he's already gone back, he'll think, actually, not enough people understood who I was, so I'm going to come again as Lord Chaitanya and show them what it means to be a devotee of Krishna. But now he's satisfied and he's preparing to leave the world. And the point that Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing here in the purport is that Krishna is taking shelter, it says in this verse, of the bank of the river Saraswati, although he is the shelter of the goddess of fortune. So in the Sanskrit it says, see, there's a lot of words that we could understand, even a fool like me can understand some of the words in this verse. But the most important ones are Krita Ketam Aketanam. So what does Krita mean? I can't hear you. What did you say? No, well not in this instance, no, it means to do, like doing. Krita Ketam. Ketam means shelter in this instance. So Krishna is taking shelter, he's doing shelter, he's taking shelter with the river Saraswati and indirectly mentioned the banyan tree sitting under the tree. Aketanam. Although he doesn't take shelter of anything, he doesn't need to take shelter of anything. So that's where it's mentioned in the Sanskrit verse. Krita Ketam Aketanam. He's taking shelter, but he doesn't need to take shelter of anything. We understand in other places in Shastra that trees give shelter. Trees are very selfless. Krishna mentions to Balaram that in Vrindavan in the Bhagavatam that the trees are bowing down to Balaram, taking the dust from his lotus feet. They're providing so many things. They're providing fruits, flowers, they're providing shade. So many things they're giving, and they don't ask for anything in return. Also we know, Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarurapi Sahishnina, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. The one should be more tolerant than a tree. I've heard the Buddhists mention before that how can you be more tolerant than a tree? And a tree's not going to headbutt you if you, you know, snip a bit of its branches off or anything. How can you be more tolerant? But we have the ability to react, whereas trees don't. So if somebody steps on us, cuts us down, mows us down, then we don't react. Then we just take it as Krishna's mercy. So that's how we can be more tolerant than a tree. I was listening to a nice verse by Keshava Maharaj in Vrindavan, and he was mentioning how the Goswamis would take shelter under a different tree every night in Vrindavan. They would move to a different tree. And some people say that they did that so they wouldn't become attached to that tree. They would just carry on. Rolling stone gathers no moss. But he was saying the real reason devotees understand why they would move from one tree to another is that Krishna was performing different pastimes in Vrindavan in different areas. So they would go to that tree, see that pastime, experience that pastime, and then the next night they would go on to the next tree and experience that pastime of Krishna. So Krishna is taking shelter of the tree, Kritaketam, that's what he's doing. He's sitting underneath the tree on the bank of the Saraswati, resting there. It says also that in the verse for tomorrow, he said, the Lord was sitting, taking rest against the young banyan tree with his right lotus foot on his left thigh. And although he had left all household comforts, he looked quite cheerful in that position. So although Krishna had left everything, although his whole dynasty had been destroyed, many of his associates and friends had left the planet, Krishna was comfortable, Krishna was happy. It's a very beautiful scene, you can just imagine it. Krishna there sitting very relaxed on the bank of the river Saraswati. And he is taking shelter underneath the tree, who knows, maybe it was hot. Often in India it gets very hot, you can sit under a tree, get a little bit of shelter. But at the same time, Krishna is the tree, Krishna is the sun, Krishna is the river. So there's no, it's illogical for him to take shelter or something. He is everything, so he doesn't need to shelter from anything. But he still likes to do that. He still likes to act in that way. Sometimes always we think of Krishna in an anthropomorphical way, that we relate to him, we extrapolate it from ourselves, because that's what we experience. I experience my life, and then I think, oh, Krishna must be something similar to that. Krishna must be something similar to me, but bigger, stronger, 5 times bigger. You know, like the frog in the well. How big is the ocean? 2 times as big as my well? 3 times as big? Because we can't conceive of it. How can you conceive of Krishna? It's impossible. So we have to extrapolate according to our experience in an emotional way. Obviously we hear from Shastra as well. But we don't realize that all of our personal traits, all of our idiosyncrasies, all of our desires, all of our emotional attachments, all of our insecurities, all of these things come from Krishna originally. It's not that I have this and Krishna doesn't have it. That doesn't make sense, right? Sarva karana karanam. He's the cause of all causes. So Krishna feels pain. Krishna feels anger. Krishna feels desire. Krishna feels all of those things. But he feels them in a perfect and pure way, and we feel them in a perverted way, as Srila Prabhupada would say. Krishna gets angry. There's a pastime where Shankarchuda came to steal Radharani away. I believe it was for Kamsa. Kamsa heard that Radharani was the most beautiful girl in existence, and he wanted to have her. So he sent Shankarchuda to go and steal Radha away and some of the gopis. And Shankarchuda did. He herded the gopis away from Krishna and Balaram. And then Krishna ran after him, and he sat on his chest, took the jewel from his head, which was the Shamantaka jewel, and then he killed him. But when he was punching Shankarchuda in the face, he said to him, the only thing I regret is that I can't torture you for eternity. So Krishna also feels anger, just like Nrsimhadev. So the things that we experience in their original pure form, they're coming from Krishna. So Krishna is taking shelter of the tree, of the river. And we shouldn't think that it's just a play, that Krishna's pastimes, he's enacting his pastimes, or he's just living his life, and he's thinking, it doesn't really matter because I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead anyway. So we hear this example a lot of Krishna with Mother Yashoda. Namamishwaram Sachid Anandarupam. The Krishna is there. Lasat Kundalam Gokule Bhajamanam. Krishna is with Mother Yashoda, and when she catches him, he's crying. He's crying tears of fear from her. He thinks she's going to beat me. She has the stick there, right? He thinks she's going to beat me. I've been naughty enough. So Krishna is experiencing that. He's experiencing that fear. Just like we experience when we were children. I remember one time I had some toy. I think I just took it from a friend's house. I didn't think I asked him for it. And I broke it. And then my mum took me back to his house by the hand and knocked on his door to tell his mother that I'd taken this toy and I'd broken it. And I was so in anxiety, you know, I felt so bad. So I was feeling that Krishna feels a similar thing. I've done a bad thing. Mother's going to punish me. Krishna's experiencing that. But at the same time, he is conscious of every single atom in the creation. Anvayavyatirekabhyam yattatsarvatrasarvadam. Krishna is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. So how is that happening? That's inconceivable, that's achintya. Krishna is mugdata, which means that he is covered, he is engaged, he is immersed in just acting like a man, like a human. But at the same time, he's sarvagya. He's conscious of everything. And just conscious of his surroundings, but conscious of everything that's going on. So for us, that is not possible to understand. We cannot do both at the same time. Although it's said that women have emotional intelligence, that they can be immersed in an emotion at the same time, be sober. It's explained that men are either working on the intellectual platform or the emotional platform, but women have the ability to deal with both, and they're usually dealing with both. But Krishna is not just sober, but he is aware of everything that's happening in the cosmic manifestation. So for us, that's inconceivable. How can something be? Something can be the same as something else, or something can be different than something else, but it can't be the same and different at the same time. I mean, we do say that the soul is the same as Krishna in that it's spiritual, but it's different than Krishna in that it's infinitesimal and Krishna is infinite. But still, it's inconceivable that it's both at the same time. So Krishna is doing both. Krita, where are we? Krita ketam aketanam. So he's taking shelter, but he's not taking shelter at the same time. So we also should have both of these aspects of Krishna in our consciousness, within our mind and within our life. We should understand that Krishna is all-powerful. Mayata damidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is everything. Wherever we go, we're not going any further than Krishna. I remember one time I was on book distribution in somewhere around Finchley area, going shop to shop. And as a young brahmachari, I thought, you know, my Krishna consciousness, I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, I'm chanting 16 rounds, I'm avoiding all the things that I used to do before I came to the temple, you know, just shaky Krishna consciousness. And going out into the material world was like, oh my God, you know, like going into the lion's den or something, like opening up the zoo and like chucking me in with the animals or something. And I was afraid what was going to happen to me. I think it was the first time I went on book distribution on Oxford Street. I went out and, you know, I was so overwhelmed. And one lady stopped and she knew the Hare Krishnas. I was like, oh my God, somebody knows who the Hare Krishnas are. So I didn't know that, you know, there's so many people out there, so many things are going to happen. So anyway, this time I think it was in Finchley or that area, I went on book distribution. And I went into the shop thinking, you know, like I'm a million miles away from the temple, I'm on a mission, try and give Krishna consciousness to these people. They never heard of Krishna before, totally inconceivable for them. And I went in and then there was this beautiful picture of Radha and Krishna on the wall of this shop. And I was just like, oh, Krishna's everywhere. Krishna's with me. You know, I'm going out to try and preach and Krishna's right here with me. So Krishna is there everywhere, always with the devotees. He's always giving shelter to the devotees. And whether we know it or whether we don't know it, Krishna is there. And we should cultivate this consciousness. Devotees are always trying to cultivate this. Viteritam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. So Krishna says to Brahma in the Chaturshloki that whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relationship to me, know it is my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relationship to me, know it to be my illusory energy. Because everything has a relationship with Krishna. If we're walking down the street and you see a beautiful woman, you think, oh, she's so beautiful. Yeah, she is beautiful, that's right. It's Krishna's power, it's Krishna's energy, it's Krishna's potency. If you see that, then there's no Maya. You're saying this is Krishna's energy, how wonderful. When she's 65, she won't be exhibiting that potency of Krishna, but somebody else will be. Everything is Krishna's energy. We're not negating things, we understand. Yeah, this is wonderful. Krishna's energies are working so wonderfully. So we should cultivate that consciousness that Krishna is everything, Krishna is everywhere. Everything that is happening is a manifestation of Krishna's potency. Just like this building, this is the Brahman understanding. That this mansion, this manor that we have, is giving shelter to us, right? It's cold outside, it's warm in here, very warm in here this morning. It's raining outside, we're not getting wet in here, the wind is blowing, we're not getting affected. But, and it's giving us that, it's channeling that potency of Krishna to give us shelter. But is it the wood and the paint and the bricks that have that potency inherently? No, they don't have it inherently. They're put together and they are channeling that energy of Krishna for the time being. In a few thousand years' time, it will just all be rubble. And there will be other buildings that are giving shelter. So it's Krishna's energy. We should see Krishna in it. It's not a building. It's Krishna's power that is being exhibited. Like I said, a beautiful woman, she is channeling, she is manifesting Krishna's energy. It's Krishna who is attractive. It's Krishna who is giving shelter. It's Krishna who is the wealth. Money can generate wealth, but if you have the same money now, you have £100 now. In 100 years' time, that £100 won't have the same potency due to inflation. It will be minimized. So it's Krishna who is the potency of that thing. It's Krishna who is the wealth, the ability of that money to give facility to enable you to do things, to give you that power. So it's all Krishna's energy. And devotees need to cultivate that consciousness, especially by reading Shastra, being grounded in that philosophy. But at the same time as developing that consciousness, we should be conscious that Krishna is a person, this other side of Krishna. So Krishna is Sarvagya, he knows everything. Mayatadamyadam Sarvam Jagat Avyakta Murtina, he's everywhere, unmanifested. But at the same time, Ahameva Sameva Gre Nanyad Sad Yadasad Param, he was saying in the Chaturshloki, it's me. I existed before this material creation. I am existing now this creation is manifest. And after this creation, I will also be manifested. Ahamevasamevagre. It's me. I am here. So at the same time, we have to understand this personal conception of Krishna, that Krishna is a person. And if you know about a person, if it's a nice person, then you'll develop attraction for that person. You'll develop attraction for them. It's amazing. If you just meet someone for the first time, immediately there's some attraction, there's some interaction, there's some love, there's some priti. You talk to them, you find something that you can relate to, some common thing, maybe some other person that you know, some common acquaintance, you'll talk about that person, you develop a relationship immediately, there's some attraction and some affection. So if we hear about Krishna, if we hear about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activity, we hear about Krishna, what Krishna looks like, Barhapidam, Natavarava, Pukana, Yokanikaram, so many nice descriptions about Krishna, how he looks, the clothes that he wears, this peacock feather, what his activities, his pastimes, then we will become attracted, just like Uddhava. He's saying that in spite of my knowing his desire to destroy the dynasty, I followed him because it was impossible for me to bear separation from the lotus feet of my master. He couldn't do it. Krishna told him, you go to Badrikashram, and Krishna went in the opposite direction. He just couldn't. He couldn't leave Krishna. We hear other pastimes similar to this, that when Krishna told Gadadhar Pandit, you take Kshatriya Sannyas, you stay in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya left Puri, then Gadadhar Pandit just followed after him. When Ram left Ayodhya, went to the forest, the whole of Ayodhya followed after Lord Ramachandra. So if we actually understand a little bit about Krishna, then immense affection will develop, immense love will develop, so much more than any love that we've ever experienced before, for our family, for our beloved, for our children, whoever it may be, we have a little bit of affection, then that love for Krishna will be so many millions of times more than that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that people say I'm a great devotee, but the proof that I'm not a devotee is that I can still live in this world without Krishna. I'm still living. That's the proof that I'm not a devotee because I don't have any attraction for Krishna. And really it's like this, that we hear about advanced devotees like Raghunath Das Goswami, then they're barely able to stay alive due to the separation that they feel from Krishna and his associates. When Sanatan Goswami left his body on Guru Purnim, then all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, this was the inhabitants of Vrindavan 500 years ago, so not the eternal Brajbasis, just the Brajbasis, who were living there at that time. They were so attached to him that they all came and they performed funeral rites for Sanatan Goswami. All the men shaved their heads, and it was a great ceremony, a great festival, feeling separation from Sanatan Goswami. And when Sanatan Goswami had left, Rupa Goswami came and he headed the ceremony. And then after that day, he went into seclusion. And shortly after then, I think it was a couple of weeks, then Rupa Goswami also left this world, because he couldn't bear to live without Sanatan Goswami, his elder brother. So if we cultivate this knowledge of Krishna, if we hear about Krishna, if we immerse our consciousness in hearing about Krishna and thinking of Krishna, then that attraction will naturally develop. Shishivara Gokulananda Ki Jai. And we might think, will it really? You know, I've been cultivating this for 10 years. I've been cultivating this for 3 weeks or however long it may be, 20 years, 50 years. But still I'm not absorbed in Krishna. But it will. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhu Kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitti Koraye Udoi. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, that this Krishna Prema, this pure, full love of Krishna is within our heart. And just by hearing and chanting Shravanadi Shuddha Chitti Koraye Udoi, then it will come out, it will manifest. But what do we absorb ourselves in? What do we listen to? Do we listen to some calming music? Do we reading the news? I should stop reading the news so much, speaking to myself. Do we listen to the news? What do we listen to? What do we hear? What do we absorb our consciousness in? And no excuse for grihasthas also. My spiritual master says that grihasthas, they should do the minimum materially. Don't buy an expensive car. Don't get a big mortgage. Then you're a slave to the car, you're a slave to the mortgage, you have to work for it, you're bound, unless you want to lose your house. Then you're bound. Just do the minimum. Do the minimum and then maximum in your spiritual life. Then maximize the time that you can spend hearing and chanting about Krishna. Because we only have a certain amount of time, right? Nobody has extra time. You can maximize your time by sleeping less and eating less. But we only have a certain amount of time, so the more we can spend in spiritual life and the less we can spend in material life, then all the better for advancing in Krishna consciousness. So we have to do those two things, just as Krishna is doing both. He's absorbed in his pastimes, mugdata, and he's also conscious of everything that's happening in the cosmic manifestation, sarvagya. Just as he's not taking shelter of the tree, aketanam, but he's also taking shelter of the tree, kritaketam, then we should also take shelter of Krishna by knowing that he is the Supreme Personality of God, understanding that tattva, and also understanding the rasa, that Krishna is a person, and become attracted and attached to that person, just as Uddhava is. But when Krishna performs those pastimes, when he performs his nadalila, we say it's like a human nadalila, but it's just natural for him. Krishna is a human, right? He's not an animal. He's not a brick wall. He's a person. He has this personality. Purushottam. He's the supreme person. When Krishna performs these activities that are like a human being, then they are always special as well. We can understand they're not. They never become boring, hackneyed, mundane. They're always special and spiritual. Satchit Ananda. Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. And there's many examples. One example is when Krishna was acting as Parthasarathi, directing the chariot, driving the chariot for Arjuna. He became the driver. Arjuna was directing him. And for those of you that don't know, that it's a little bit more humbling, more degraded situation than driving a car. You have an Uber driver. You tell him where to go, he's going to drive you there. But with a chariot, supposedly you direct the driver with your feet. I mean, I've never been on a chariot like that, have you? Or seen that? Anybody seen that before? It doesn't work like that with a rickshaw either. But supposedly you like kick them to tell them which direction to go in or when to go, or something like that. I guess like with horses, you have a whip, you know, you go. And with a chariot driver, then you kick them. We use your feet. Usually devotees don't touch anything with their feet. And we shouldn't. We shouldn't step over things. We shouldn't step over devotees. We shouldn't move the cushions around with our feet. It's disrespectful. Devotees don't do that. But that's what Arjuna was doing with Krishna. Can you imagine? During the whole duration of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, not only was he telling Krishna what to do, where we should go, when, but he's doing it with his feet. So quite a demeaning situation in one sense. So Krishna is performing this service happily for Arjuna. Krishna loves to serve his devotees. Just like the devotees love to serve Krishna. Advaita Acharya was so unhappy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would deal with him respectfully, that he engineered this situation where he preached Mayavad philosophy, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came very angrily, took him off the Riyasa stand and started to beat him. When he did, Advaita Acharya was in ecstasy. Yes, finally, Lord Chaitanya has accepted me as his subordinate. So Krishna also, he becomes the humble servant of his devotees, his prema bhaktas. That's why he's so reluctant to give prema, because he becomes subordinate to his devotees on that platform. But he's happy to serve his devotees. So he was serving Arjuna in that way. And then at the end of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, at the end of the battle, then when it was all over, almost everybody had been killed, with the exception of the Pandavas. Who else was still alive? Ashwatthama? Anybody else? Krishna? Kripacharya was still alive. And? the end of Mahabharata, yeah. Okay. So it was all over. Millions of people had been killed. And then the Pandavas were very upset. And Krishna said, okay, you get off the chariot. No, Arjuna said, okay, let's go. You can get off the chariot, Krishna. Krishna said, no, you go first. So Arjuna got off the chariot. Then Krishna alighted from the chariot as well. And when Krishna alighted from the chariot, then the chariot exploded, set on fire, and just disintegrated into nothing. Because Krishna had been shielding Arjuna from so much. If it hadn't been for Krishna being on that chariot, being right next to Arjuna, it's explained that Arjuna would have been killed. He would have been vanquished. They were not capable of facing the power of the Kaurava army. So Krishna is performing that humble service, but at the same time his inconceivable powers, his inconceivable potency was there, and it was shielding Arjuna and making the whole thing possible. If it wasn't for Krishna, the Pandavas could not have won the battle of Kurukshetra. Another seemingly simple pastime of Krishna was when, as usual, they were performing their mischievous activities in Vrindavan, stealing yogurt from the houses of the more elder gopis, the mothers of the gopas. So Krishna and the cowherd boys were out stealing yogurt, breaking into their houses, going into the storerooms, climbing up, stealing yogurt, breaking pots, feeding yogurt and butter to the monkeys and to the birds and eating it themselves. So the gopis would always try to catch Krishna when he was doing this. And in this instance, they did catch Krishna. She caught him red-handed, caught him by the hand and said, okay, I'm going to take you to Mother Yashoda now. I'm going to show her. You got yogurt all over your hands. I saw you. You were in my storeroom. This time, you know, it's over. Your mischievous activities are finished. You're caught. I'm going to take you to your mother and she's going to see what a naughty boy you are, and she's going to discipline you, and that's going to be the end of your mischievous activities, and you're going to grow into a normal, responsible adult. Mother Yashoda was very concerned that Krishna is doing all of these things. What's going to happen when he becomes a teenager? You know, he's this bad now. He's only 5, 6 years old. When he hits 13 and the hormones kick in, what's he going to do? So she wanted to raise him correctly. So this gopi grabbed Krishna by the hand and walked him all the way to Nandagram and to Nanda Bhavan. Knocked on the door. Mother Yashoda came to the door and said, hello, hello my dear, how can I help you? Nice to see you. And she said, what are you talking about, Yashoda? Your son is here. He's been stealing yogurt in my house. We've caught him directly. He's got yogurt and butter all over his clothes, all over his hands. You have punished him. It's unacceptable. He's leading all the other gopas on this track. Can you do something about it, please? And Mother Yashoda just began laughing then. What are you talking about? You know, what's the problem? It's your son who you're holding here. It's your son whose hand you're holding. Where's Krishna? There's nothing to do with Krishna. Krishna had turned into another gopa, taken the form of that gopa. So the gopis saw this. She was holding her own child's hand. And totally embarrassed and flummoxed and flustered, she walked away thinking, no, what's happened? How could this have happened? Have I gone mad? Or what happened? And as they turned, walked away, Mother Yashoda closed the door. They started walking down the hill. She's totally bewildered. Krishna assumes his original form again and says, if you do that again, I'll turn into your husband next time. So Krishna's simple activities, innocent activities, are always transcendental, they're always spiritual, and they're never touched by the influence of the material energy. And just one last point I'll make is that it's also similar for us, it's also similar for the soul. That the soul is eternal, ever existing. The Bhagavad Gita says the soul is never burned by fire, never withered by the wind, never moistened by water. The soul is always transcendental. It's always above the modes of material nature. But at the moment we have this avatar, as they say these days, right? Amazing how they're taking on these Sanskrit terms. We have this avatar, not literally an avatar, but we have this form in this material body. that we're so absorbed in. We have this material identity. And as soon as we're absorbed in this material identity, then there's so many anxieties. How does that verse go? Dvayam bayam dvitiya binivesita syat. That as soon as you see two, as soon as you see something separate from Krishna, immediately there's fear and anxiety. So we're absorbed in this body, and not only in this body, right? I have this body, but I also have my money. You know, I'm just as attached to my money as I am to my body. What's going to happen to my body? My money, what should I do with it? Am I going to lose it? Am I going to get more? Where should I put it? You know, what should I spend it on? Should I save it? And not just our money, but everything else. My house, my car, my clothes, my wife, my children. We're attached to all of these things. And because we're in the material world, at every second they're under threat. At every second there's risk. At every second there's danger. So we also have this naralila of the soul, this attached identity of the soul within this material world. But devotees have to understand that, yeah, I'm here, I have this body, but at the same time I'm beyond it. At the same time I'm independent of it. At the same time I don't need it. And it's not going to, other than engaged in Krishna service, it's not going to give me anything. So devotees who are situated in knowledge, they can understand that, yeah, I may have this form that I can take responsibility for, but at the same time, I'm beyond it. I don't need it. I don't need any of the things that I have. It's all Krishna's. It's all Krishna's energy. Krishna can give it and Krishna can take it away. So the soul also has those dual aspects, and we should understand ultimately we're beyond this world. So Srila Prabhupada's last words were, I've heard, he said, everything moving and non-moving is Krishna. Hare Krishna. Those were Srila Prabhupada's last words. Krishna was so, Srila Prabhupada was so attached to Krishna, but still he understood Krishna is everything. Krishna is everything. I love him so much. Okay, thank you for your attention. Does anybody have any quick questions or answers? It's already 8:30. Yes, Prabhu?
Thank you for your wonderful presentation. In this section, in this fourth chapter, and as well as in the 30th chapter in the 11th canto, both places it's mentioned that when Krishna is sitting on the banks of Saraswati, prepared, means ready to leave the body, at that time he's in his four-armed form. So at both places there's no Prabhupada. Prabhupada doesn't write anything here, his disciples don't write anything there. So I was just wondering, was it just out of Krishna's free will, or is there any specific reason for that?
I don't know. Anybody know? I also read here that it said, he was saying, as far as I could hear, that it says here in the third canto and the 11th canto that Krishna was in his four-armed form when he was here on the bank of the Saraswati. And you're saying, is there a particular reason, right? Yeah, I'm not sure. Anybody have any conclusive answers to this? Otherwise, my speculation would be that he manifested it to show that he was the Supreme Lord. But I don't know. We'd have to check. Because it's also he's also exhibiting this kind of personal, relaxed nature, right? As Krishna. We're not talking about Narayan here. When it says he has his right lotus foot on his left thigh. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to check it out more. Sometimes Krishna manifests that form and then he doesn't manifest it anymore. Like when he appeared, right? He shows it, like flashes it. This is, I'm the Supreme Personality of God. At a time when devotees need to know that, and then it disappears again. He shows that that is part of his nature. But the specific details, you'd have to do some more research. Okay, anybody else? And Mataji?
Hare Krishna. In this verse, Lord Krishna tells us that he takes shelter of himself, right? And
no, he doesn't say of himself. He says, well, he doesn't say it. It says in the Bhagavatam that he's taking shelter of the river and the tree. That's what it says, but it also says that he doesn't take shelter of anything, because he is everything, so it's difficult for him to take shelter of anything. If you are everything, there's nothing else left, right?
Yeah, indeed.
But if he wants to take shelter of it, because he's omnipotent, he can also do that. Like somebody asked Prabhupada once, if Krishna is so powerful, can he create a rock that he can't lift? Right? Because if he can't do that, that means he's not omnipotent, because he can't create something. But if he can't lift it, that also means he's not omnipotent, because he can't lift it. And Prabhupada said, yes, he can create a rock that he can't lift, and then he'll lift it. So Krishna can do anything. So he's taking shelter and he's not taking shelter at the same time. He's taking shelter and he's also giving shelter.
I finished the question.
Yeah, go ahead.
In our own small way, to a certain extent, we will have to do the same, but since Krishna, we are not complete, no, in himself, and we take a refuge in Krishna. Taking refuge in Krishna, therefore, means taking refuge in a spiritual master, means serving devotees, and at the same time reconnecting with ourselves, because Krishna is also in our heart, right? Okay. So the question is spontaneously, how do we truly connect with Krishna if we don't face our anarthas, our internal ghost? It is a process of Krishna consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada, when they asked him the question, are you devotee of Krishna brainwashed? He replied, yes, because we need the purification, no? But this does not mean stopping asking question and not looking inside. We have free will, right, no? It must be used, and choosing to face your anarthas is a courageous act that requires time and patience, I think. We will have to be very, very sensitive and loving towards ourselves and others, no?
Yeah, it's... A devotee is defined in different ways. I was in the same lecture by my spiritual master that I mentioned, he was saying that a devotee is one who has prema. And he's saying, or if you're very liberal, you can say that a devotee is one who has nishta. But to get to nishta is like climbing a mountain for myself. You know, to get to nishta, where most of your anattas have already been destroyed, you're steady in devotional service, and then, you know, it's kind of automatically developing from there. So yeah, we have to purify ourselves from anattas, and it's questionable whether one can be called a devotee even if they still have anattas, or, you know, gross anattas. So we have to purify ourselves of anattas, but the main thing is to be Krishna conscious. The holy name is powerful enough to destroy all of our anattas in a second. But the question is, how conscious of the holy name are we? How absorbed are we? How attentive are we? The holy name is potent. The question is, how receptive are we? So that can destroy our anattas. But because we are so conditioned, it takes a long time to develop attention, or to speak of affection or attraction. But yeah, we have to purify anattas, that's true. But we shouldn't be anatta conscious that, okay, absorbed in my own lust, how am I going to deal with my lust? Or how am I going to be absorbed in, how am I going to deal with my greed? We can deal with that, but the main focus should be Krishna, because he's the potent factor that will purify all of those things. Thinking about your lust won't purify you of lust. Thinking about Krishna will purify your lust, serving Krishna.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll finish there. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.